Welcome to Marketing with Walker and Grimm, the show about marketing and advertising specifically targeted for those of us in central Pennsylvania. I'm John Walker, and when I'm not doing podcasts, I serve as a digital marketing director at LNP Media Group.
And I'm Marcus Grimm. I'm the vice president of market growth and innovation over at Benchmark Construction. Welcome back to episode 3 of this three-parter, John.
Absolutely. Welcome back. And today we're going to talk about the third and final of the three M's, the three things that make marketing campaigns succeed. So today we're going to talk about how to actively manage, and managing is the third M of the three M's, how to manage marketing campaigns to ensure that they succeed. And this builds on the first two M's we covered in the last two shows, messaging and media. So in those shows, we showed that businesses need to get their marketing messages right, they need to spend enough in media, and now we're going to talk about actually managing these marketing campaigns.
Yeah, because the reality is this. All the things that we've talked about before, you know, your messaging, you know, it would be great if you could roll out one message and be done with it. It would be great if I could say, hey, you know what, $5,000 a month in the Lancaster newspapers is exactly what I need from now till the end of the time. But the reality is these things do change. So the question we have for the audience is, how do you manage a campaign that's running? I mean, those ads are in place. You bought the media. So what's left to do?
Yeah. And you know what? Let me take a step back in the time machine to one of the first jobs I had. I was an account executive on Hanes pantyhose.
Tell me.
Not the socks, the pantyhose. I was the only man on that account, and I knew more about pantyhose than probably anyone else.
How'd you get the job?
Well, you know, I talked my way into it. So some of you may remember the campaign was called The Lady Prefers Hanes, and we profiled successful women, and this was back when wearing pantyhose was really an everyday occurrence at most kind of certain types of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And our creative team came up with a concept for a TV campaign, and they decided it just had to be shot in Paris. That's right, Paris, France.
Was this your idea?
I supported the idea heartily, but you know it was going to show these kind of atmospheric images of people walking through the streets of Paris, striding through those gorgeous streets, panoramic shots, beautiful music. We actually hired Nat King Cole's brother, Freddie Cole. He's a great musician in his own right. And he composed some beautiful music.
I like where this story's going.
Yeah, right. So. Now, this was going to be fantastic. You know, these were going to be extraordinarily beautiful, really movie-quality commercials. They were going to be a lot of fun to produce, too. And as you can imagine, they were extraordinarily expensive to produce, and it took a long time. These probably cost about $500,000 in 1990s dollars to produce. And it was going to, you know, the production period was going to be 4 to 6 months. And that was just to produce the commercials, and then there was going to be the cost of the media to run these. So there was a lot of money tied up in these. Are you getting the picture?
It is a big unwieldy campaign, but beautiful.
Right. At least we thought so. So the ad agency that I worked at used to go to what were called the upfronts. Mm-hmm. And this was an event where the TV network sold lots of media time up front, and agencies bought all that time a year in advance. And then the agencies would resell that time to their clients, like Hanes, mm-hmm. you know, to run TV campaigns. So you can see that we're talking about a ton of lead time, both the media buying and the production.
Absolutely.
You know, months and months and months of lead time. And over the period of time, both with the media buying and the production, there was almost no chance to change course.
Of course not.
Once the wheels started turning.
A lot of production value, sure, yeah.
Right. And the other thing about this is that nobody wanted to make a mistake.
Right.
We sure as heck didn't. The client didn't. There were a lot of dollars at stake. This was going to be a big national campaign. No one wanted to make a mistake. There was no kind of agility, no flexibility built into the process.
Well, and you know, I think that, and we're going to talk about why that's a bad thing, but that really is a relic of the old days of advertising. I read a great article recently, John, which is a similar time zone, which is the story of Dan and Dave. You might recall the decathletes.
Yes.
The two decathletes, sure. they were the two best decathletes in America, and Reebok decided to create a campaign pitting Dave and Dan against one another.
I remember.
It was a multifaceted campaign, many, many ads. These guys were going to compete to get into the Olympics, because this is an important part of the story. They hadn't actually qualified. They hadn't had the Olympic trials yet.
Right.
And then they were going to meet at the Olympics, and I'm not sure if it was Dan or if it was Dave, but then they go to the Olympic trials, and one of the guys doesn't even make the Olympic team.
Right.
So it's really interesting what you're saying there, John. You had a big, expensive campaign. You guys didn't want to make any mistakes because you couldn't make any changes because you didn't want a Dan and Dave on your hands, where suddenly this whole campaign was about two guys getting there, and you know, how do you pivot? You know, so you know, How do you optimize these campaigns, not just after them, but during them? That's what we want to talk about.
Yeah. So, you know, the end of that story with Hanes was tremendous amount of money went into it, tremendous amount of time. Thankfully, you know, we didn't make major mistakes. The client, you know, was a good partner in the process. It all turned out well, but there wasn't any changing course during the process, and there wasn't changing course once the ads started to run.
You know,
we let those ads run for months and as long as a year. You know, we had a rotation of ads, but we weren't changing the campaign, and then we were doing research to determine, okay, what effect on awareness was this having, and what effect on predisposition to buy the brand was this having.
But in the world where, so what's really interesting here, and this is where we really want to go with this portion of the program, is at a certain, you didn't want to manage a campaign because you didn't want to see any mistakes you're making.
Right.
But also the technology at the time and where you were advertising, you couldn't really manage it. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, now that things are digital, management's a lot different, right?
It's totally different. And this is the idea. The idea is that we've moved into a period where a lot of most marketing campaigns are digital marketing. They're constantly generating data about their performance, and we can use that data to manage the campaigns as they are running. That's the idea.
Not a week later, not a day later, but...
That's right. So if you think about, so the type of data that's being generated, if you're running digital display ads, if you're running ads on Facebook, you immediately know how many of those ads were delivered. You know who they were delivered to. Generally, you run a variety of ads. You might test six or seven at once. You know which of those are most popular, which are getting the engagement, which are getting the likes and clicks. And so you watch that data all the time now. And using that data, you optimize the campaign to do more of what's working and less of what's not working.
Yeah, and you know, that's really relevant, I think, particularly for our listeners, you know, the local advertisers here in central Pennsylvania. But I'm still guessing those big TV campaigns still take a long time to produce and cost a lot of money. So, I mean, you know, can you even make them more nimble? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's true, you know, and some of those big TV campaigns, I think, are managed in a similar process as they were. But here's one of the big differences. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, TV campaigns delivered the critical mass of American consumers because you could reach most Americans sitting in front of their TVs every night. So for big national brands, running, you know, primetime television was the way to reach everybody.
That's where people were, and you know, we highlighted this on the last episode, but also they weren't picking up their phone during commercials either.
That's right. And the mass reach of TV has diminished a lot, and media is a lot more fragmented. And as you just said, you know, people who are watching, they may have a tablet in their lap, they may have a mobile phone beside them. They're doing more than one thing at once. They're skipping ads. So that has changed a lot. You know, that type of kind of mass reach TV advertising, not to say it's a thing of the past, but it's something that doesn't work the way it used to work.
Okay, so here's my question for you. John, the pantyhose king Walker, my question would be this. You just told us a story about shooting commercials in Paris for multi-million dollars. What in the world can a business here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania that's selling stuff on Queen Street, how can they manage their... What can I take out of this story, John? Or are you just trying to tell me about the time that you had an all-expenses-paid trip to Paris?
Well, yeah, I was looking. I've been looking all season for a chance to tell that story, and I thankfully found one. But there are pieces of that I think apply to businesses in Lancaster County
that you and I
both work with today. Okay, you know, first of all is the idea of testing. It's the idea that you test more than one piece of creative at once. So today, if you're running a digital marketing campaign, whether it's Facebook, frankly, whether it's email, variety of others, test more than one piece of creative.
You have to. I mean, one of the things that I absolutely believe, John, is if you understand your audience, targeting's actually pretty easy. So guess what? If the ads aren't working, the problem's the creative. I'm gonna defend you, John, and I'm gonna defend every person who sells media out there. How many times have you had customers say, "I didn't get a response on my ad," and you look at the ad and you go, "This is a piece of garbage." You won't say it, John, but I'll say it because I've been there. The reality is this: you need to put a ton of energy into the creative. Guess what? Garbage doesn't sell.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But you know, related to that, I was looking at a Facebook campaign that we had run last week for one of our internal brands. And I looked at two ads side by side, and I saw that one of the ads on Facebook had gotten somewhere around 16 clicks.
Yep.
And the other ad had gotten more than 100 clicks.
Wow.
And these two ads were targeted at the same audiences on Facebook.
So, and that's huge because people don't realize creative matters. It matters a lot.
It matters a lot.
16 versus 100.
And you know what? I authorized both of those ads to run.
Right.
I thought they were both good.
Well,
and I was totally wrong about one of them. And the only way that I knew that was by actually letting them run and seeing which one worked and which one didn't.
Yeah. And you know what? It requires marketers with the humility to realize that they haven't got it all figured out. So, because it happens all the time. For all we know, the one may have pulled better on a given day of the week or when the weather is a certain way. So multiple messages, testing the creative, it's huge.
Yeah, for sure. Another is, once the campaigns are turned on, check the performance several times a week. Look at them by advertisement, look at them by region, look at them by landing page.
Yeah.
You know, many times we'll send to more than one landing page so that not only are we testing the ads, we're testing the landing pages where people go after they click on the ads.
Yeah, so you got to do the analysis to say what's working and what's not working. But then, John, you got to do something with that news.
Right. Well, you know, back to those two Facebook ads. So I authorized what turned out to be a bad ad to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't work. The good news is we didn't let it run long. We let it run for a couple days.
Right.
We saw it wasn't working. We turned it off and we reallocated the money that would have been spent behind that ad to ads that were working.
So realistically, when we talk about campaign management, what we're really saying is analysis and reaction.
That's right.
So it's the analysis, what did I learn from this, and then act in a final way.
That's right.
And one of the other things that I mentioned too, you know, another way that I do campaign management is, you know, when you're doing all this, you know, you shouldn't be doing it in a vacuum. You kind of need to be figuring out what your competition's doing.
Right.
So one of my favorite tools, and I consider it to be a campaign management tool, you know, you're talking about all the analytics tools that are built into all the ads that you are running. But, you know, you can use a tool, an online tool like SpyFu, SpyFu.com. That's a great way to see what your competitors are doing. You know, what keywords are your competitors doing? Because the reality is this, they might be doing something that you are not doing and you want to be there. You know, one of the things that, you know, doesn't campaign management theoretically just refers to managing your own campaign, but I think we should always do that through the lens of, well, what are my competitors doing? So you certainly want to be paying attention to, you know, are your competitors advertising in a certain manner and experimenting there as well.
That's great. Yes, SpyFu is a great tool. Now, does that tool also show how much your competitors may be spending in some digital advertising?
That's right. Yeah. So you'll get some. You will definitely get some predictions there. I tend to think that it's like a lot of tools out there in that I find it to be directionally accurate.
Okay.
So I would not necessarily lock in my budget based on it, but it sure is good food for thought.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, hey, so these are some ideas that we're using here all the time in terms of managing campaigns. And you know, if I was to sum it up, I'd say, you know, start your campaigns, watch them closely, adjust them constantly. Don't spend money, obviously, on ads that aren't working, but know that you can sort of test, measure, and evolve campaigns as they're happening.
And it's critical. And the reality is this, you know, John, I'm not a 27-year-old marketer anymore, so a lot of my natural reactions are to do the things that I was doing 20 years ago, which was a set it and forget it thing, like a crock pot, okay? John, I think I've got a line for this episode. Digital marketing is not like a crock pot.
Wow, I think that's really going to take off. I'm going to tweet that out right now with a hashtag.
Well, you know, I've been jealous. We've gone through these couple episodes here. You had your three M's of marketing, which is probably going to be, you know, what John Walker's known for. I think what I'm going to do is Marcus Grimm's A Guide to Digital Marketing through the eyes of a kitchen chef. Perhaps.
I like that. Well, all right. Well, you've been listening to Marketing with Walker and Grimm, the show about marketing specifically for businesses in central Pennsylvania. To hear all of our shows, please subscribe at Google Play, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts, or visit us at LNP Media Group.
Hey, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.